Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, August 31st, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, an interesting day all day in many different markets and the news. A lot to talk about today. Let's get started. We have gold up $1.80 at $11.3660. We have silver up $6 at $14.76. Platinum is down $7 at $101.4. And we have palladium up $15 at $6.06. The USDX today is a little weaker, 0.30. at 95.85, but crude oil is up huge, 3.52 at 48.74. Paper markets today, they were down all day, triple digits, 114, 16,528. The NASDAQ's down 51 at 47.76. The S&P down 16 at 19.72. 10-year yield, 2.20%. The euro is still right in there at 112, up 0.45, so at 112 for the euro. And just a mixed bag in the Asian and European markets. Germany, you know, barely moved. London barely moved. Japan was down 1.25%, and I don't believe the Hang Seng was open overnight. So sort of a quiet Monday, although there's a lot of activities and Alan, you know, we were talking prior to the program, and I says, well, did you hear about, and it really is kind of interesting, the Illinois lottery goes broke.
That's a bad sign, Melody.
Yes,
it is. That's like when the casinos go broke in Las Vegas, you know we're in trouble. All right, that's my major economic indicator. When the casinos start going broke, we got trouble in this country. Same thing with the Chicago or the Illinois lottery. How can the lottery go broke?
They are actually issuing IOU notes instead of winnings.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
interesting.
Really?
I'm just wondering if they're issuing IOU notes if you win the lottery. Do you suppose I could buy lottery tickets with IOU notes? And
now,
then I'll pay off if they win.
Can you imagine if you had a winning ticket of $250,000 and Illinois gives you an IOU? I mean, that's happened to a couple.
That would be interesting. I'll bet you have to pay taxes on that $250,000, even though you might not have anything but an IOU yet.
Probably.
Yeah, be surprised.
But, you know, $250,000 and you get an IOU, you know. So, again, it's just another sign of the times. Is it just Illinois? Probably not. But they're the first one that I've heard where the lottery is issuing IOUs. So,
well, Illinois is a special place because they've jailed four out of their last five governors. That's a hard record to beat. They were hoping to get five out of five, but they only got four out of five.
I don't know. I'd be pretty hot.
Well, Guinness, this is part and parcel of the same thing. If you want to find out what happened to the lottery money, ask Mr. Blagojevich. He probably knows. He's still in the slammer, so far as I know, and former Governor Blagojevich.
Mm-hmm.
Ask him. He might be able to. Oh, yeah, we've been looting the lottery for years. Mm-hmm. You know, that is just so stupid. In theory, the only thing the lottery does, they collect money. They have to deduct the cost of selling the tickets and printing the tickets, and I know there's some administrative costs, but they have gone broke. They don't have enough money to pay off on the...
They have to pass the budget. They have to pass the budget first, and I guess that's what's holding up the payments. The budget hasn't been passed. So...
Well, that's interesting.
But it is. It is. But just a sign of the times. An interesting, you know, an important one. Probably not that important, but interesting. Al, you live in Texas. Did you know that Texas is a top destination for Californians that are fleeing their state?
Yeah, I understand. That's top destination for Mexicans that are fleeing Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Probably
yes.
Top destination for people from Illinois that are fleeing Illinois, going to Texas.
About 5 million Californians left California between 2004 and 2013. 3.9 million arrived from other states for a net population loss of roughly 1.1 million. And this is from the Sacramento newspaper reported on Monday, and they were using the tax return data from the data from the IRS. But nearly 600,000 Californians wound up in Texas, while about 348,000 Texans moved to California. So kind of swapping a little bit.
So the place to be
there
is New Mexico, where you can pick up on the business. People are going both directions. New Mexico's probably booming because of the transportation.
Well, the thought behind this, I don't understand. I mean, California and Texas, but I believe Texas has a little bit lower tax rate and a little bit lower cost of living than what you have in California.
Well, it depends on whether you're going for, if you're moving to the state where you have the best opportunity to work or the best opportunity to collect welfare. See, a lot of people are moving to California to collect welfare. A lot of people are moving from California to find an environment where they can work.
And I would think with the latest boom in the oil, that probably had a lot to do with it also.
It might. Mm-hmm. It may be that people are just confused. They started out driving. You know, California
ran
has
out
a drug
of gas.
Problem. No, they have a little drug problem out there. And it may be they just went out for an evening drive, and next thing you know, they were in Dallas. They said, why not stay here? Drugs are cheap. So.
Well, I would think every state has a drug problem, but...
Well, they all do.
Yes.
But California celebrates their drug problem more so than the other states. Other states look at it kind of, you know, they look askance at the drug problem.
Hmm.
California sees it as an advantage.
Hmm. Hmm. You know, there's talk about the central banks, what they did to help save the markets. They had a big Jackson Hole meeting this weekend. And, you know, pretty much that came out of the Jackson Hole meeting was, you know, hey, we're just going to keep cheap money coming. And most of the important central bankers were there in Wyoming. And Britain, Japan, the Eurozone, U.S., they all want to keep monetary policy loose. So they're all, you know, pumped Bank of England, you know, the Bank of Japan. They're still adding to its stimulus around $700 billion a year. And, you know, they're all going to learn, as we've talked about this program, you know, quantitative easing really doesn't go down to the, you know, to the people, but just pretty much helps keep the stock markets higher. And
it doesn't stimulate the economy.
Does not stimulate
it doesn't
the
cause
economy.
So far, if we can believe the report by one of the vice presidents up at
it always runs out of
St. Steam. Louis. St. Louis Federal Reserve issued a report just about a week ago now where he said, look, quantitative easing hasn't worked. All right? The purpose is to create inflation to stimulate the economy. Hasn't happened. And he also says that the zero interest rate, that hasn't done him any good, which means if his strange report is evidence of growing consensus within the Federal Reserve, then it means they don't have any tools to deal with another downturn. What are they going to do? They can't lower interest rates anymore, but even if they did, it wouldn't do them any good. His contention is that the lowered interest rates were actually causing deflation rather than inflation, or contributing to, you know, contributing to deflation rather than inflation, and QE doesn't work. So what's the point to it? I read that report. It is either very strange the vice president from the St. Louis Federal Reserve would be allowed to make, he just says, well, I've got a crazy idea. I think I'm just going to publish it and we'll put it out there and see what happens. I don't think they work that way. I think my suspicion, I certainly don't have any evidence to back it up, but my suspicion is that his report is expressing what they know. And they've come as a consensus to believe in the Federal Reserve system. Said this stuff doesn't work. And he was the first one to kind of release the information before Janet Yellen talks about it, before the Federal Reserve openly works on that basis. He's saying, look, this stuff doesn't work anymore. And if that's the case, then there is no point to quantitative easing for. If it doesn't work, why do it? Why throw more money down a rat hole? That's the point.
Well, why?
And if it doesn't work, and yet what your Wyoming meeting is telling us is that they are saying, oh yeah, we're going to keep throwing money down the rat hole.
Yep.
So
of course they are.
I don't know.
Quantitative easing helps for a short period of time, and then they'll stop, and that's why they have to regenerate more. And it is only for there. And what was interesting, I saw an interview today with Fisher. And Fisher's old. And,
you mean he's over 71?
He's really old.
That's old.
He's really
You're
old.
Over 71. I'm only 70. So.
He looked like he was 91. But, you know, sometimes these guys, you know, maybe they're coming to terms and maybe he's bucking the status quo a little bit. Maybe he's speaking out because this was something very much in tune. He was talking about raising rates and, you know, he pretty much said the same thing. Well, big deal. You know, so what if they raise it a quarter point? So what if they raise it, a half of a point? You know, he says it's virtually not going to do anything. And so it's most likely now is the time. He thinks now is the time to do it instead of waiting any longer. But you know, in this meeting, the Bank of England governor, Mark Carney, there's other alternative courses that the UK can take. And this is one, and this is the point that you can't tell me that all governments, all central banks, all politicians are already thinking about this, but he talks about how they would tell politicians that the only sustainable way to get their economies moving is with hard cash from taxed wealth and incomes. Government should borrow directly to fund public infrastructure and productivity improvements. If the government is too embarrassed to admit to voters that it needs to borrow money, then the least central banks can do is sign deals with high street banks to lend rather than hoping they will take QE funds and do something useful with them. The evidence is already there for all to see that investors would prefer to pump the money into the stock market and property, both of them inherently unstable and prone to violent crashes. People do want this money pumped. They want to keep those stock markets up without really realizing what the after effect will be. And when I see words like tax wealth incomes and borrow, to me, that's going directly after retirement accounts and so forth.
I think one of the problems they've got, and part of the main reason for quantitative easing, is that the government could no longer effectively borrow money.
Yeah.
And therefore, the Federal Reserve had to buy the government bonds because the government couldn't find anybody dumb enough in the private sector to buy them. Which, in other words, nobody was out there to lend money to the current government except at a substantial discount. They said, well, all right, we'll buy that bond, but we're not paying you anywhere close to face value on it. And they couldn't admit to the public that the bonds are already being devalued.
Yep.
That's what's happening. So they said, all right, the Federal Reserve, you buy them and you pay the full price on them. We don't want to. You have to buy the bonds and maintain the illusion that our bonds are still strong. But the whole idea behind quantitative easing, at least initially, well,
it's
wrong to say the whole idea, but primary idea, they couldn't sell enough government bonds. So the Federal Reserve had to the private sector, feds had to step in and buy them. And if they come back in again, I'm going to assume that would be, once again, it would be part of the reason.
But
which
they
means they can't. You're reading from You're reading from Fisher, and he says we need to borrow from the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can.
They can do anything.
Well, yeah, they can do it, but I don't think they can do that to the tune that needs to, that they would like to have done at an interest rate that people are going to want to pay. Do I want to lend money to the Federal Reserve and or the government and lend money to the government or whoever at a half a percent?
Hey, there's people out there taking negative rates. So, yeah, if people think that it's coming from a place and it's safe, then, yeah, they're willing to do anything. So you can't say that they wouldn't do it. But to me, what I believe in is they can't find, yeah, they're going to look elsewhere. They're going to look elsewhere and take whatever they can take in order to keep it going for as long as they can.
Well,
or they'll use those funds after it collapses, and then they'll use those funds to.
This is evidence of the P.T. Barnum School
it really
of Economics.
Is. It yeah. is.
Yeah, we have a lot
fuzzy
of
math.
Yeah, fuzzy math. There's one born every second, the rest of that sort of thing. There's lots of them. You know, when you look at some of this, it's very difficult to keep investing in the stock markets rather than in something like gold or silver. If you really start to look at the fundamentals and start saying, look, this thing's going to blow up. We know it's going to blow up. I mean, this is like, again, one of those cartoons where we have Yosemite Sam is chasing Bugs Bunny, and they go into a darkened room, and Yosemite Sam lights a match to see what's going on, and it turns out he's in the powder room with these barrels of gunpowder. Well, you know what's going to happen, but he's trying to follow the rabbit, all right? And inevitably, the match lights. We don't know when the match is going to light the barrels of gunpowder, but this is like that. The Yosemite Sam School of Economics, same thing. We think we can get through the room filled with gunpowder with a lighted match to guide us. It's crazy, but there are people that are going to try. Let's take a break for commercials, and Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herb's Emotional Stress Formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704 875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I did a comparison today, and I went back again. I'm using the numbers from January 2nd, and just did some numbers, worked up some numbers on $20 gold pieces. And as a reminder, spot gold on January 2nd was $1,190. Today, when I worked this up, was $1,135, down $55.
For the year.
For the year.
Yep.
Mint State, 62 $20 Liberties, and the Saints are up $60 and $65. Mint State, 63 Saint Gaudens are up $100.
Now are you saying they're up $100 over the price of...
No, they're... price, because they're not based on spot price. They're based on supply and demand factors. So
you're
this
saying they're $100 higher than they were on January 1st.
That is correct for the retail prices.
Even though the price of gold is down $55,
that is
the
correct.
Price of these Mint State coins you're mentioning are up 100, which means they're relatively speaking they're up 155 compared to gold.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And the reason you have this type of increase in any particular item that I'm going to talk about is because of demand. The demand has been strong, and the supply, folks, these items are not mass-produced. So, again, you have a limited supply. Demand is up, pushes the price up. Now, Mint State 63 $20 Liberty gold pieces didn't do as well. They are actually down $5 since the first of the year. But there is a reason. The people are buying higher quality coins. The mints. Go ahead.
There's another reason on this, too. What this is evidence of is we've seen that there is a growing demand for gold and silver coins. That demand is being reflected in the collectible coins, and it's being concealed in the bullion coins. When they manipulate the price of gold to drive it down, that's controlling what's happening to bullion. But the overall demand is coming in and saying, well, I'm going to take an MS62. I'm going to take an MS61. I'm not just taking a bullion coin. I'm going in for a collectible, and the demand is showing up in higher prices. I think we're getting real numbers or something like real numbers out of the collectibles where we're not getting it from the bullion, if that makes any sense. Did I make Do you get what I'm saying there, Melanie?
I get what you're saying. And that's why the $20 gold pieces are so important to have in your portfolio, because they basically get the play from two separate markets. You have the melt value of the coin, which does reflect with the gold prices. The melt value of the $20 gold pieces will match, you know, whatever the gold. You'll never get less than spot gold for it because you have the melt value. But then you have the supply and demand factor, which is what propels it. And you're right, Al. They do break away from the bullion prices when demand is strong. Historically, $20 gold pieces do perform in a fear-driven market. That's when they do the best, because people are fearful. They're coming into the market. They're getting protected. And they're, again, the supply diminishes as the demand picks up, pushes the prices higher than what the melt value of the coin is. And the spreads can be significant. When we saw the peak on $20 gold pieces, it wasn't when gold was $1,900. The $20 gold pieces hit their peak sooner than the 1900, but what happened, we reached a level and then you had a lot of the paper bids push the price up on bullion gold. When demand across the country, internationally, was actually decreasing. So it reflected in the $20 gold pieces. So when I look at $20 gold pieces and I see the prices moving up, it's like, hey, people are buying.
Yeah.
And again, it does confirm what's wrong with the bullion market. And because people get confused, you know, they don't understand, well, how can people be buying? And even how can the U.S. Mint produce all these coins and we still have lower gold prices? And again, sometimes we focus too much on the spot price of gold and silver instead of the fundamentals and why you buy it, and look at the signs of what they're showing us and what they're telling us. Right now, the $20 gold pieces are buying. Hey, market's hopping. The markets are hopping.
I have a suspicion, crosses my mind, that if you were to keep track of the difference in price between the increases or decreases in the price of the collectible coins, the mint state coins, as compared to the spot price of gold, I think it'll tell you if the market's going up or down. And I don't just mean the market for, I don't just mean the market for collectibles. I'm saying that when the market for when the price for collectibles is obviously rising, I think that's evidence that at least in the free market, the price of bullion gold should also be rising. I think it's an evidence, I suspect, and I don't know that it's true,
that's
but I
not
think it
always
might be an indicator that might be useful at some point in the future. So this is your homework assignment for this weekend, Melody.
Thanks, Bob.
You were
going to
take a couple
of
days off, but now I want you to collect all the data back to 1800.
Now, that's not always the case, but I mean, they certainly do provide your performance, your protection, and your privacy. So $20 gold pieces give you so much more than what bullion does. And the plan always was and is you'll sell those $20 gold pieces at peaks and trade them in for gold bullion. That way you can increase your number of ounces of gold that you're holding. And, you know, that is the plan. But let's get back to the Mint State 64 $20 St. Gaudens. They're up $110. Now, when I talked about the Mint State 63 $20 Liberties, they were down $5. Here's why. The Mint State 64 $20 Liberties, they're up $135. So you're seeing that people are stepping in and buying a little bit better quality while the prices are low. That's the key. Some of the AU $5 liberties that a lot of people enjoy for small fractional pieces, getting that free 33 coin, they're up over 3%. And we don't talk about silver. Let me mention silver briefly. From January 2nd, silver was $16. Today, when I did this, silver was $14.60. So we're down $1.40. And if you just go into the circulated Morgan silver dollars, they're up 7%. So in dollar terms, they're about $1.75 on a $1.40 drop in silver.
They're up $1.75 as compared to $1.40
in spot. Correct. Okay. And again, supply and demand, folks. And the Morgan silver dollars never really hit the big lows that spot silver did. So again, it's okay to be diversified. That's the key. But when you diversify, you want to make sure that you're getting product that's going to work for you and not against you. And give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We talked during the break, Al, and I just got to mention it to the listeners, and we'll move on. And this just bugged me today, and since this is our program, I get to say things that really bug me. And I don't know why it bugs me so much, because I guess he's always in our face. But today, Obama did an executive order changing Mount McKinley back to Denali, changing it to Denali, the mountain in Alaska. Obama is the first president who ever flew into the Arctic, north of the Arctic Circle. And so I guess he decided to, while he was there, he was going to change the name of Mount McKinley by an executive order to Denali. And I don't have a problem with the name. I just have a problem with an executive order to get it done. He's up there to promote also global warming, looking at all the ice melts and everything. But then just a few weeks ago, he gave Royal Dutch Shell a final permit for expanded drilling off Alaska's northwest coast. So, you know, it just...
He's kind of a man for all seasons. Whatever's going on, he's got something to say about it, do about it. And he's also a little bit like a teenager who's constantly looking for attention. You know, this issue of whether we're going to call it Mount McKinley or Mount Denali, that is, he's going to win the Indian vote on that. Right? The Indians are going to say, yay, the great brown father, he's aces with us. It could have been just left alone. It's as if the guy has got to attract some attention wherever he's going. He's like, look at me. Sort of a teenager mentality, and some of it's just annoying. I don't know that it's significant, but it's annoying. Why not
go away.
Yeah, right.
He's just like never going to go away.
Somebody put him out on a golf course and leave him there. You understand?
Let the cart run out of gas.
Yeah, right.
Here's interesting. Ben Carson and Donald Trump are at 23% each in most Iowa Republicans. Prefer someone without a traditional political pedigree. So this is the first time since July 26th, the poll. In Iowa, they show Carson and Trump equal. So,
that is interesting. Mm-hmm. Some people have from the beginning of Trump's candidacy, within a week or so, well, at least after the debate, a lot of people are saying a Trump-Carson ticket. Trump for president and Carson for vice president. And certain amount of prescience.
You know, Trump says the right things, but there's something about him. It's just like, who would he choose for his cabinet? I mean, it's just like, I see all kinds of, you know.
Give them numbers, because they're all going to get fired. You know that. You know, I think Trump is going to make a killing on this thing. I think he's going to do a reality show from right there in the White House.
Maybe.
You're going to have TV cameras following him around. You're fired. Who are you? Secretary of State? Fired. All right. He's going to be knocking one of them off every week. We're going to have who's going to be fired from the cabinet this week, Melody? That'll be the topic of conversation around the water cooler.
I mean, sometimes I hear what he says, and it's like, wow. But then, in the next breath, and I just think of, who would his vice president be? Anyway. But I do like Ben Carson.
He's had a bunch of candidates on the Apprentice, and I'm sure he would. That may be where he'll go for his vice president. One of the people who won the Apprentice at one point or another. I would bet they must have had an all-star Apprentice contest with the winners of 8 or 10 of the previous programs, seasons, whatever. I don't know if they did that or not. I didn't watch the program religiously. I saw a few of them. Maybe you can pull somebody out of The Apprentice.
I don't know, but, you know, that's my biggest question. And where do, you know, and again, you look at, in order to bring this economy back, like he's planning to do, I mean, yes, building the bridges and the wall and everything for what his plans are for the illegal immigrations, yeah, I'd have to give him, you know, a pretty good high score for that. But then when you think about a lot of other things, you know, to bring this economy back, what is he going to give up? I mean, that's what trading is all about. That's what making deals is all about, is, you know, you give up at the same time you. So we've already given up so much. I guess it couldn't get any. Well, I guess it could, but.
Well, I think one of the things about it is Trump, you know, I think we've talked about this a little in the past. What's appealing about Trump is that unlike most of the politicians that we have, he's not an ideologue.
Correct.
Meaning he's not just there promoting one political agenda, one political slant. The Democrats have a particular ideology that they want to promote. The conservative Republicans have another political ideology they want to promote. Trump just wants to get things done.
Yep.
And he's not concerned about the ideology, and that's one of the attractive things about this guy. He's just saying, let's build a bridge. And the Democrats say, no, it's got to be a blue bridge. And the Republicans say, no, it's got to be a red bridge. And Trump says, screw that. Let's just build the bridge. And people are sitting back and say, yeah, let's just build the bridge. How about that? You know, we talk about how much polarity, the polarization that exists within the Congress right now in the Senate. And the two political parties are not working together in a sense, in a kind of consensus, at least not that's apparent to the public. And they insist we're on one side and the other ones are completely on the other side. There's no middle ground for them. Trump is saying, let's just build a bridge. That polarization contributes to the sense of ideology. And what does it get us? It's not getting any bridges built. And, you know, Trump, he's got a pollster. I think he's got somebody going out there who's sampling, finding out what do the people really care about that nobody's talking about. And they found out. The people are concerned about immigration, but nobody's talking about it. Trump said, okay. Let me in. And I think he's going to keep on going that way. He's just going to say, what do these people really want? I don't care if they want to be red or they want to be blue. What do they want that nobody's talking about? And that's where he's making great headway. So it's an intriguing campaign. And, you know, Trump, the one thing, if I had to say it was a weakness, maybe a strength, maybe a weakness, is he just shoots from the hip.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get the impression that he's delivering a prepared speech.
That's not the part I have a problem with. You know,
well,
I mean,
it may get him into trouble before he's done. But just the same, it's also, if he doesn't have a prepared speech, then we know the guy, he's shooting from the hip, but he's probably being honest. He said, well, this is what I think. Let's build a bridge.
There isn't one of them that's talking about our debt that I heard. And no one just ever mentions our Constitution, even in a winkling of an eye or a breath of, I mean, no one.
I agree.
Even if they would just mention it every now and then, you know, like, yeah, okay, he's going to do what he is legally able to do, not just going to go out and make it big deals regardless of what he's allowed to do. And it kind of reminds me of the president that we already have, just in a different. But anyway, here's an interesting article. Oh, we're going to break.
I think we should. It's time.
Already?
You know how Frank will start to cry if we don't pull the plug here for a couple of minutes. A couple of commercials, then Melody and I will be right back. And Frank, our producer, will have wiped the tears from his eyes and we can get on with the program. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back on Financial Survival.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our extra strength pain relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I don't know if you want to do this odd.
Yes,
let's do it.
Do it, Melody. Do it.
Odd but true. China's enlisting squads of trained monkeys to clear skies during their WW2 Memorial March. But that's really not what's important in this. There's something in here that I find interesting in this, but the article starts out and talks about an elite squad of falcons and monkeys to see off an army of migrating birds which are feared to disrupt its World War II commemoration parade on Thursday. This huge display will see 12,000 soldiers and 500 pieces of artillery roll through Tiananmen Square to mark 70 years since Chinese People's War resistance against Japanese aggression and the World Anti-Fascist War. And that's how the superpower describes it. I think it's interesting to see Japan has announced its largest ever military budget to help protect its outlying areas or islands from China's military reach. And I think things are really being heated up between these two countries. But this is not about that. This is about monkeys that have mastered the skills. They use them to destroy birds' nests. The primates take twigs out of the nest one by one before shaking the remnants out of the branches. Two of their fastest apes have cleared 180 nests between them this month. And 180 nests.
Like, big deal.
And these are monkeys. They used to use shotguns and water cannons to get rid of the nests, but their monkey method is more efficient and economical. And,
which means that an unarmed monkey is more effective than an armed Chinaman when it comes to keeping birds, you know, don't crap on my parade. Apparently, that's what they're concerned about. The birds are going to defecate on the Chinese tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are using trained monkeys to keep the birds out where the armed Chinese would not. I don't know, Melody, but it's just one of those things where you sit back and say, this is a strange world. They're recruiting monkeys in China?
Yes.
And then after the parade is over, they can have the monkeys in the stoop. You can have the monkeys, you can recruit them now and have them for dinner later. What do you think?
Hey, efficient.
Efficiency.
Feed all those poor people in the outlying areas that never got to take advantage of China's growth. But what's next, Al?
Got an article here from The Guardian, a little bit of what you talked about earlier. Central banks can't save the markets from a crash. They shouldn't even try. That's the headline. The Guardian is an English publication. According to some city analysts, the stock markets are pumped up with so much credit, cheap credit, that a crash is just around the corner. And they worry that when the crash comes, the central banks are all out of moves to prevent the aftershocks from causing a broader collapse. What they're saying here is they think the central banks have invested as much money in quantitative easing up until now as they can. They don't have any money left. Circumstances are, their argument is they suspect the banks are essentially broke and they can't step in to do much to save us if we go into another collapse. They go on and they're talking about Fed pumped $4.5 trillion into the financial system. Bank of England pumped £375 billion. Japan is still adding to its post-crash stimulus with around $700 billion a year. And they go on with a list of some of this. It says in each case, the central bank has adopted quantitative easing, which involves buying government debt to drive up its price. And my comment on this is I don't know that quantitative easing was ever intended to drive up the prices of government bonds. All right? It's not as if, you know, the quantitative easing supports the existing price of government bonds and keeps them from falling. They didn't come in and say, oh, I know what we need. Let's drive the price of bonds higher. That's not what quantitative easing was about. Quantitative easing was this, oh my gosh, the price of bonds are going to collapse. And if they do, everybody's going to know this is a house of cards. So they jumped in to prevent the price of bonds from falling, not to drive their price up. It's a little bit of, you know, is the glass half empty or is it half full? But the reality is they were quantitative easing was intended to prevent a crash when people saw that nobody wanted the government bonds. That's what it was about. Not to drive them higher, just to keep them from falling lower. I'm beginning to see articles and comments from gurus and from people within the the Federal Reserve and the central banks that suggest that in the event of a real crash, central banks will not be able to do much to bail us out of that problem. They've done all they can up until now. If we crash again, you're too bad for you. All right? That's what they're essentially saying. Now, you've probably seen a few of these articles in the media. You folks in the audience probably see them. And I read these articles as devices to prepare the public for the fact that during the next crash, they will not be bailed out by quantitative easing or the central banks. Next time the markets really go down, they're going to go way down. That's the implication on this, particularly if they're correct. The banks say, we've done all we can do, and what we can do didn't work. Quantitative easing didn't really work. Near zero interest rates haven't really helped us. And the banks are kind of saying, we're out of here. You know, you guys are on your own. So, got to watch what you're doing here, folks. The central bank is not here to save you. We've got another article from Shiller. This is from Newsmax. And the headline is Shiller. Average CAPE ratio puts Standard & Poor's at 1,300, Dow at 11,000. Nobel laureate economist Robert Shiller of Yale University says his indicator, this is the CAPE index, which CAPE is an acronym for Cyclically Adjusted Price-to-Earnings Ratio. Robert Shiller says his CAPE indicator shows that the current stock market values are overinflated and will only crash even lower. Shiller invented the cyclically adjusted price-to-earnings ratio, a key indicator for stock market crashes. According to the Shiller's CAPE ratio, stock market is significantly overvalued. This metric modifies price-earnings ratio to account for the business cycle. Between 1881 and 2015, CAPE averaged a ratio of 17. So we're talking over a period of 135 years, basically. The average CAPE ratio has been 17, well below today's reading of 27. They see 27 as evidence of trouble headed our way. Levels higher than that have occurred very few times, including the years surrounding the stock market peaks of 1929, 2000, and 2007. In all three instances, the stock markets eventually collapsed. Shiller said his indicator would put the Standard & Poor's, current Standard & Poor's, close to 13,000 from where 1988, which is where it was on Friday, and the Dow at 11,000 from
1,300,
from 1,988 on Friday. And the Dow, he thinks it should be about 11,000 as compared to 16,643 last Friday. Well, on the one hand, that's a little bit of cause for celebration. There's some people that are thinking that the Dow could fall 5 to 5,000 points. And Shiller said, no, it belongs about 11,000 right now. Well, it's not as bad as it could be, although if it drops from 16,000 to 11,000, it's not likely to stop there. 11,000 might be a legitimate price, maybe, maybe not. But assuming that we're true that that 11,000 is a legitimate price for the Dow, if it falls from 16,000 down to 11,000, the momentum will probably take it down a few thousand points more before it bottoms out and starts coming back up. So it's just another one of these leaves in the breeze where people are saying, look, we're sitting on the end of it or on the edge of it. We're close to a very serious problem. And Shiller is not the first one to make that comment. You can't pick up a newspaper without finding someone who's saying, look, the markets are overvalued. The market indices have to fall. Are they right? Are they wrong? I don't know, but there's certainly a great consensus. You can't find many people who are arguing, oh, everything's going to work out fine and the markets are going back up to 20,000 in the Dow. No one is arguing that at this point that I'm aware of.
Well, there's always a few out there who want to make those statements to get attention. 20 years ago, we talked about the Dow and gold, you know, crossing at 3,000. 3,000 was the level. And it was just, I don't know, maybe two months ago, when the Dow was still at 18,000. I had said that you could probably see the Dow at 10,000 and gold at 10,000. I think you're going to see the two will meet, but I don't think it'll be 3,000 anymore. I think it'll be at a much higher number. But, you know, that's a big drop from 18,000 to 10,000. It's not as bad from 16 to 10, but if you take the peak, you know, it's not any different. If you take the peak of 18,000 down to 10,000, my point was...
It's serious, but it's not catastrophic. It's way better than dropping to 5,000, 7,000.
Yeah, but when we dropped to 6,000, you had the market at what? It wasn't as high as what it is now. So if you adjusted for the level that it went up versus you're around 9,000, 10,000. And I definitely think you'll see higher gold price. I think the gold and Dow will meet, but it's not going to be at 3,000. It's going to be at a much higher level. I think it'll be higher than 6,000. But I don't think it'll be, you know.
Will it happen this fall?
No.
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 Well, I look forward to it. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the Dow and gold, it would suit me just fine if they met at 20,000. I have nothing against the Dow, but if the gold and the Dow crossed at 20,000, I say, yippee, yippee.
Gold's not going to get to 20,000 if the Dow is at 20,000.
No, I understand, but I'm just...
But, you know, you asked me if we could see these numbers this fall. Hey, if the right event happened, we could. I'm not so sure we're going to have that right event this fall. So we just
you know, I was listening to someone speaking on being interviewed by Greg Hunter. And the guy was asked what he thought the price of gold was going to be or where it would be this fall or whatever. What he said is he said he'd worked on Wall Street for 20 years or thereabouts. And he said one thing he learned early on, he mentioned some guru who helped him to understand things. And he says, you never put a price and a date in the same sentence. Mm-mm. You understand? You can talk about price, you can talk about times, dates, but you don't talk about the two of them in the same sentence because you just, nobody can put that together. And we can speculate as to what the price is going to be. Yeah, will the price of gold one day be $20,000 an ounce? Yes. Will it be $50,000 an ounce? Yes. But it might not be $50,000 an ounce for another century. You know, people, some people predict it's going to happen pretty rapidly, within say, 5 years. But other, you know, maybe, maybe not. Will it happen within the next century? Sure. Virtual certainty that it's going to happen within the next century, but is it going to happen in the next 5 years? And the point is, trying to combine both dates and prices is, you know, it's speculation. A little bit of a fool's errand when you say, oh, this is what's definitely going to happen. No. There aren't many of us who have the gift of prophecy, and therefore there aren't many of us who can be relied on to tell us what the price is going to be and when it's going to reach that price. And that's part of the mystery of the whole thing. It's, on one hand, it's part of the reason that it's scary. On the other hand, it's part of the reason that it's exciting and fun. We don't exactly know what's going to happen tomorrow. You know, it's the perils of Pauline. We've got our, for those of you who like to follow the markets, oh my gosh, what's going to happen to the Dow Jones tomorrow, Melody? Huh? What about that? And it kind of keeps you going on one level. Keeps you interested. All right? It's one of those things where we can kind of follow. It's, we are concerned about our investments, but there's a drama here that we can watch. And you can, sometimes it makes you mad and sometimes it makes you happy, but it keeps you interested all the time. Got 30 seconds left, Melody, and I have nothing left to say. So,
well, I'm not sure any. I don't think any of this might be exciting if you're prepared. I don't think it's fun whether you're prepared or not. And we're going to see a lot of people's lives change. We're going to see a lot of things happen in this country that is going to be frightening. It's going to be sad. It should be scary and frightening. And but if you're prepared, that takes a little bit of that pressure, takes a little bit of that off, and at least you can sit through and watch it unfold in a little bit better place than most.
Well, we will sit there and watch it unfold tomorrow on Financial Survival when Melody and I return. Thank all of you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.